Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Why was the first thing I thought was, oh, is he wiping his ass for?
Kane is alive, Undertaker!
You don't suck because these people say you suck. You suck because Stone Cold said so.
D-Generation X is on top of the world!
Frustrated isn't a goddamn word for it! This is bullshit!
To 1997! Thank God it's Christmas. It's not anymore, it's January. Welcome to the Cultaholic Classic Raw review as the other Cultaholic lads recover from AEW Revolution. We're recording this beforehand, but I reckon it's about 19 hours and you're hearing this while I'm in bed recovering from it. We are here via the IcaPro Power DeLorean back in the halcyon days of now 1997 on the very precipice of Attitude being punked out of the new generation era into parts unknown. Who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell. And joining me on my almost endless odyssey, with a capital odd, to watch every episode of Raw from the beginning is the mulligan to my O'Hare, the Clive Fuck of Cultaholic, the rambunctious Jackie Orlando. How you doing, Jackie?
There was a little treat for our Patreon subscribers there, because when you mentioned AEW Revolution, I remembered that I'm working it and suddenly had 1,000 yards there. So,
mate, you and I both, we're both asleep when this goes out, so it's fine.
Oh, fantastic. But they're so always long. They're good shows, but they're very long. I've had to actually start doing them in my downstairs, right next to, we've got like a downstairs toilet, just because there's fuck all gap between matches that I could literally stand up, take two steps, piss, and then be back. So,
I mean, I'm all for a pay-per-view that is wall-to-wall bangers, but away, Tony.
give us some shite, Tony.
Like, Tony, what you don't understand, mate, is that part of a pay-per-view is the shit matches in between, because that gives us all a chance to have a little piss, have a little calm down. But nope, just all 30-minute five-starers. All right, I mean, it's a nice problem to have, but at the same time, fuck off. Anyway, how are you?
I'm cromulent, thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am also cromulent. I mean, this won't be on the Patreon or anything. This was a nice little sneaky thing for me and thee. So we always like to show how the sausage is made. So when I was prepping for this episode, I got a last minute call. They threw up the bat signal at BBC Radio Newcastle to ask if anyone could cover a couple of days for a poorly presenter. So I went, yeah, go on then, get in there, let's go. But obviously it interferes with my time spent watching old episodes of Monday Night Raw from the past. It completely chews into my very busy schedule. So what I did was I got in extra early on the Tuesday, on about 3 hours before I started the show, because the BBC, the Newcastle offices have these little solo working pods for like focused working. They're like little paddock rooms, essentially. And I've always wanted an excuse to use them. So I had my lovely little coffee, I had my lovely little porridge, and I sat in one of the panic rooms and watched Raw from 1997. And I love the idea of important people from, because it's near the BBC Look North offices as well, where I was sat. I love the idea of people from BBC Look North just coming past and just seeing me watching Mankind versus Owen Hart and wondering what the fuck's he doing with one of our pods, we need them.
But there'll be one person out of the team who'll look sheepishly left to right and be like, "I was a big fan of Owen Hart, he was great," and then he'll fuck off.
Oh yeah, I mean, because I had the door shut, no one came in and spoke. But I like to think that they could have had a little look in and just say, "Oh, it's an old episode of Raw from 1997. I bet it's for that brilliant podcast that he does with Jackie Orlando."
Of course, the world famous shitbag, which is our podcast.
How dare you? This is at least listened to by 9 people.
And I love all 9 of them with the full force of my heart.
And there's a lot of force behind that heart as well.
Oh my God, yeah.
Right, so should we just throw ourselves into the job at hand, getting ourselves poised for 1997?
I'm very excited, Tom. I'm very excited because it's 1997, and while the in-ring quality will go into the toilet, the ridiculous quality will go into the fucking stratosphere.
It really fucking will. Now, in true New Year style, I'm just looking at my notes now, and I have written January 6th, 1996. Like every good kid does when they go back to school after Christmas and New Year off.
I've forgotten how to write.
I don't know how to write, Dad. Help me, Mother, and other parental units. So January 6th, 1997, a massive year ahead in the world of wrestling. And Jackie Orlando is going to go through Dave Meltzer's briefs and see what pulls out in just a moment from the Wrestling Observer for this week. But some boring world news headlines. Number one movie in America for the first week of 1997 is Michael.
Oh, is that John Travolta as an angel?
It is John Travolta as an angel, sent to Earth to do various things, mend some broken hearts along the way. He's actually an archangel because he's an angel who's a bit of a dick. I really enjoyed Michael. I don't know whether you got a chance to see it.
No, I've never seen it, but as soon as he said it, I was like, what the fuck's Michael? And then I just could see like John Travolta's little tired face. I was like, ah, okay, it's that one.
John Travolta sizing up a bull in a field and going, battle, which is a favourite moment from the film. Mixed to negative reviews, 36% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Number one, though, that's all that matters to the studio execs.
Exactly, number one this week, and that's all that matters, with a musical score by Randy Newman.
Hey.
I got a friend in me.
He's an angel called Michael.
Oh, he was the guy from Greece. Number one movie in the UK is Evita.
Oh, okay, okay.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. The truth is, I never watched you. An American musical historical film based on Evita Perón, the life of Eva Perón, rather, talks about her rise and fall, almost like a YouTube video, and her death at the age of 33. The music is composed by Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber. What a powerhouse that is. It inspired a music, which inspired a 1978 musical as well, did the concept album of the same name from 76. And it brings us to where we are today. Madonna starring as Eva Perón, Jonathan Pryce as Eva's husband, Juan, and Antonio Banderas in the cast as well. 71 million on its first day of initial release. By the end of its first weekend, it had grossed a ridiculous amount of money and more to come. More theatres were added as it expanded and expanded and overall made a stupid amount of money and became a bit of a timeless film in the process.
Mm. Never seen it, but it's always one of those that, like, it seems every 5 years Madonna would go, hang on, I'm gonna do another film, and one would be a big hit, and she'd be like, okay, right, sound, suddenly seeking Susan, done. Evita, done. Time to make a load of shit films for the next couple of years.
You have to get the ratio right.
Yeah.
Have to balance it out. No change in the music world as we go into 97. Number one song in the US is Toni Braxton, Unbreak My Heart. Not broken yet. And To Become One, the song about safe sex from the Spice Girls. Not with, but from. Is number one in the UK. The video game Diablo was released this past weekend, made by Blizzard North. An action role-playing game in which you fight through the fictional kingdom of Kandorus in the mortal realm, and you take on a hero battling to rid the world of Diablo, the Lord of Terror. Ever played Diablo?
Never played Diablo. I've got friends who are big fans of it. I think, is it Diablo 2 that's the one that everyone loves?
I think Diablo 3.
Three?
Possibly.
Diablo 8.
Diablo harder.
Yes, Diablo with a vengeance, Mr. Bond. No of it, but that's about as far as I can go with it, I'm afraid.
Well, too fast, too Diablo out in this particular year. on the 6th of January, so on this day of episode of Raw, Channel 4 closes down for the last time. Now, what that means is, back in the day, you young whippersnappers, is that channels used to end at about midnight or 1 a.m. and you'd have the voice go, and that's the end of our programming here on Channel 4. We thank you for watching and we'll see you in the morning. Until then, good night. Back in the day, BBC played the national anthem at the end of the day as proceedings as well. But they go 24 hours from today. Do you remember that feeling of staying up super late and being naughty and knowing you were up late because you had the end of Channel 4?
I'd never saw the actual end crossover. What would happen for me instead is I'd wake up in like the middle of the night and be like, "Ooh, let's see what's on telly." Nothing. Okay, switch that off and go back to bed. So I never saw the actual handover, but I have seen just literally a blank screen and watched it for 4 hours.
See, literally there was a point where there was nothing on TV, where there was nothing we could watch. The power of the radio at that point lived on. you bastards. This week in 1997, David Bowie performs his 50th birthday bash concert at Madison Square Garden, New York City, that features guests like the Foo Fighters, Sonic Youth, Robert Smith of The Cure, Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins before he bought the National Wrestling Alliance, Placebo, and Lou Reed. What a lineup!
I liked it. Yeah, 90s Bowie. I'm surprised Nine Inch Nails weren't involved, because 90s, he was just like, you know what? Wazza wazza. I like what these fellas are doing over here with keyboards and guitars and that. Why don't you come be my friends, wazza wazza?
And he famously ended every sentence with wazza wazza.
He did after the 80s, yeah. Before the 80s, he was all kind of like sat on top of a bookcase looking terrified because he hadn't slept for a week. And the 80s, he was just like, do you know what? I've done all my cocaine. I'm just going to become a Cockney bloke.
What a guy. That's the boring real world. But what was happening in the wrestling world, Jackie Orlando?
Well, Tom, you'll be pleased to know it's a very short issue with the Observer this week. It was the 1996 Wrestling Observer Awards took up fucking so much real estate. So I'll just glance over them, because as we know, Dave is very thorough, and whether you like him as a source of news or not, you can't deny the fact that he's a great source as a historian. So for the Observer Awards 1996, we'll go for the big ones and then a couple of surprise ones. Best wrestler, Dave's mate, it's Kei Kobashi, isn't it? Kei Kobashi.
Big kid too.
Shawn Michaels was in second place. Mitsuharu Misawa was in third. Most outstanding wrestler was Rey Mysterio Jr., Manami Toyota second, Kei Kobashi third. Best babyface was Shawn Michaels. Best heel was Steve Austin, who was also, I think, best on the mic as well. Best feud was WCW versus NWO. Best promotion was New Japan. Best booker was Paul Heyman. As you'd expect for 96. Interesting one. Most underrated wrestler, Leaf Cassidy.
Okay.
Mm. And on, worst wrestler, you love this one, it's Loch Ness.
Oh, giant haystacks getting a shoe in. God love him. I was so happy when he popped up. Oh, so briefly on Nitro. Like, fucking giant haystacks in World of Sport as Hulk Hogan's next big monster to crush. And he's there going, I'm going to get you, Hogan.
I love the logistics of it, of him getting a phone call and being like, hello, Bischoff. Oh, fly me out from Doncaster, cock. See you later.
You're going to fly me out of Leeds, Bradford. I ain't going any further.
That weasel hat.
Iconic giant haystacks promo that I feel like I watch on the regular. That weasel hat.
He's got four teeth in his head. He's the size of a fucking locker room. He's a big boy.
And he looks like, God bless him, he looks like he stinks.
Oh yeah, but it's one of these, I was talking about it with my mate the other day, because, you know, the stupid discourse online about, you know, body shaming Eddie Kingston. And if you were to say to me, okay, you've got to pick on one of these men for a fight, Giant Haystacks or Batista, I'd pick Batista because I'd be like, Batista will flatter me. Giant Haystacks would fucking kill me. Look at him. Just a bastard.
I'd pick Haystacks because I feel like I could outrun him.
No, you're locked in a small room with him.
Oh, hang on. You moved the goalposts there.
Of course I have.
I just
want you to say you'd fight Batista.
All right, I batter Dave Batista.
Yes,
I don't care if that gets back to him or not. I'm not even bothered, mate. Yeah. My best friend Jeff Jarrett will protect me.
Of course he will, the total non-stop arsehole.
He is such a total non-stop arsehole. God bless him.
So, a bit more from the Observer this week. We go to WWF News. And obviously the big thing, and we'll come up to it in Raw itself, it was the debut of Shotgun Saturday Night on January the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch this?
I did.
I watched it as well. But before we give our thoughts on it, I don't know if you want to do it now or if you want to do it during the episode, but here's what Dave said about it. The debut of Shotgun Saturday Night on January 4th was largely a flop content and reaction-wise. The show didn't air live in his market, but the reaction was 100% negative by those who called and faxed, and strongly negative for that matter. So in terms of the venue they ran, the Mirage New York nightclub, drew 350 fans and made a $6,000 house, but they had talked about a 3,000 capacity for the show. They charged $20 to get in the door for a risque comedic show that wasn't funny, according to the reports we received.
It really wasn't.
It was Kinky John Fowler, wasn't it?
Mate, if it had been Kinky John Fowler, it'd have got 5 stars as far as I'm concerned. But this audience is like ginger in my hand. Fucking Kinky John would batter the flying nun.
Let me tell you this, brother love.
Todd Pedigso, you can get out of here, you goaty bastard.
So apparently the plans for the next episode of Shotgun, it's going to be at the All-Star Cafe, it's going to be free admission, and because it's in a themed restaurant as opposed to a bar, the show will be less risque.
Ah, boo. We will put a pin in that because I'll do a little section where Tom watches Shotgun Saturday Night this week.
Mm-hmm. So away from Shotgun Saturday Night and to the live show tours, live shows this week for the WWF have seen Steve Austin go over HBK in the main event. Oh. Actually, no, it's not even in the main event. I can't remember where on the card it was, but in my head, I'm just like, it's Steve Austin versus Shawn Michaels. That's clearly a main event.
You'd have left the moment the three count went down.
Yeah, of course. I would have been like, yes, see you later. So the matches would be Austin versus HBK. Brett would run in to just have a big fight with Sean. Dave was at one show in Stockton, California, and said, before the Michaels-Austin match, Austin was on the mic saying he was going to kick Sean's ass. Sean then pulled his... in his words, pulled his turns and under trunks down all the way basically to his knees to show his ass to half the building. Unfortunately, we were on the other half of the building. That was the first time I've ever seen a wrestler expose himself, at least as part of the show, in more than 25 years ago into live wrestling. People on the half of the building that saw it were pretty stunned.
Oh, Meltzer clutching his pearls. Good heavens!
Is that a man's ass?
Is that a bottom? Don't look, the wife!
I've met thy gaze, the wife.
Last time I saw an arse that big, it was Kenny Kibasi.
Hey! Hey! Hey!
Ah! Kenny, I've seen an arsehole bigger than you.
On his rotary phone. He had to go to a bank of phones to make that call in 1997.
I've got to ring Kenny now.
Kibasi, wait.
I'm thinking of you. Sean dropped his trousers. I thought, I was thinking of arseholes. It's Kenny Kibasi. I wonder how he's doing.
Yeah, not bad.
It's 3 a.m, Dave. What is that all you rang for? Yeah, just to make sure you know you're a cunt. Bye.
In terms of people that Dave wouldn't call a cunt, also at the Stockton WWF show was Ken Shamrock, and he was literally mobbed by kids wanting autographs.
Christ, do not do that to Ken Shamrock. He's known to fly off the handle.
Yeah, he's a live wire of a man, we'll say that much. But
16 kids were injured at a wrestling show in Stockton this weekend.
After Lunatic in red undies just started swinging for the fences.
Belly to belly in them all.
But I wonder what Ken Shamrock was doing there. I'm sure we'll find out.
Exciting.
Also exciting, the Grimm twins were let go by the WWF, so that I'm sure they'll be back soon enough. Fuck me.
Oh, they just keep on bouncing around with the Grimm twins, and they'll come back with less hair but make more money.
Yeah, bastards. And they'll just keep falling upwards, won't they?
They really, really do.
So we go from WWF to WCW. So this is an incident I was aware of beforehand, but the way Dave's written it up hasn't actually said when about it was. So I've just had to improvise here. WCW have ran some live dates. Don't know where. One had a backstage altercation between Scott Hall and Jerry Sags. If you recall some time back, Hall gave Sags a concussion doing a nitro angle with some stiff chair shots. So, Sags told Hall before the match not to hit him in the back of the head since they were doing chair spots in the match. Sags threw a chair into the ring at Hall, who caught it and did the spot where he threw the chair back at Sags and apparently hit him in the back of the head pretty hard. Apparently, Sags snapped and ran to the ring and basically was pounding Scott Hall, bruising and bloodying up his face, particularly his mouth. They calmed things down and continued the match. Then they had a post-match argument backstage, although no blows were thrown. No word on any repercussions from the incident, but there was a lot of heat about it. And Hall is pretty high on the food chain, so we'll have to see. Nasty's had heat with Hall and Nash some time back after the first time working with them, so...
Yeah, we've seen the NWO beat up the Nasty Boys on the Classic Nitro review.
Yeah.
Because the Nasties were sort of courted for a bit as NWO members, and it turned out to be a big old prank, lol.
Yeah.
Thank God, because that would have been hilarious. Nasty Boys joining the NWO. But I don't know whether he was injured during that, but there might be more to come from that. So I will keep tabs on any chair shots or any chairs thrown by Scott Hall towards Sags.
Because I know there was two separate things while doing research for a project which isn't out yet, but you've probably already figured it out. And there was like an errant chair shot one time. And then I think with this one, it turns out that Sags thought that Hall was taking liberties with him, but it was Nash who accidentally potatoed him or something, and he just snapped. I just thought Hall's doing that again and started punching him in the head. Unless I've got my stories mixed up, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. But WCW in 96-97, you don't want to piss off Scott Hall and Kevin Nash because they'll get you fired.
They will get you a little bit fired.
Yeah. So, people who are in charge of firing, Eric Bischoff, Sonny Ono, and Sullivan, Kevin Sullivan, flew to Honolulu after Nitro for the first of the scheduled quarterly meetings with New Japan. Apparently, there was some heat last week regarding either Sasaki not willing to do the job on Nitro for Hugh Morris or New Japan not wanting him to. WCW wanted Sasaki to lose clean to the moonsault since Luger, Flair and Arn Anderson all lost clean to the Power Special during the tournament in September and when Mad Men didn't happen. In Dave's words, the problem is that the result would make it to Japan and Sasaki is too high on the New Japan food chain to lose to Hugh Morris clean. So,
good argument, mate.
Yeah, I mean, we know with hindsight from 2024 that the relationship stays okay at least, but cracks being shown anyway.
Yeah, they'll keep on for a little bit, but there'll always be a little bit of tension there.
Yeah, going to New Japan itself, obviously it's January, so we've just had the January 4th show, and it was called the 97 Wrestling World in Tokyo Dome. Ooh. And drew a reported 62,500 fans, which is okay, isn't it?
That's not too bad at all.
Yeah, so wow. The highlights of it, Super Liger debuted, pinning Koji Kanemoto.
Now, I believe this is when you put Liger into a SNES.
Yes, it is.
It's a 16-bit version of Liger.
It is, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. And for any of our North American friends out there, I say SNES. I don't say Super NES. I don't say I sometimes say Super NES as a kid, but SNES, isn't it?
It's SNES!
Yeah.
Get over yourselves.
But Super Liger debuted pinning Koji Kanemoto. And this is Chris Jericho in a mask. And it was meant to be... I remember reading this in Chris Jericho's first book. He was meant to be the kind of, like, you know, the negative version of Jushin Liger. So where Liger wears red and has, like, a bit of a smile on his mask and black hair. Super Liger is silver and has, like, devilish teeth and has blonde hair. But this is the only time this gimmick will ever run because Chris Jericho could see fuck all in the mask. So Chris Jericho worked the Tokyo Dome. Elsewhere... Jushin Thunder Liger defeated Ultimo Dragon for the J Crown. He's got all the belts, so that's nice. And Shinya Hashimoto retained the IWGP Heavyweight Championship over Riki Choshu. And that's all the news.
That's pre-Wrestle Kingdom, isn't it? Because obviously is New Japan would go on to do Wrestle Kingdom as their big January show, but we're not quite there yet, are we?
Yeah, I think the first one, well, hang on, when was it? 17 years ago. I think the first one was New Japan versus All Japan, the first Wrestle Kingdom, if I'm not mistaken. And then after that, it just becomes, let's just have loads of big lads hit each other. So,
which is a great time had by all.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great time had by all. Anyway, two bonus sections before we get into Raw this week. We start with Tom and Jack watch the first episode of Shotgun Saturday Night this week. If you'd like to join us for this, by the way, some clever clogins has uploaded all the episodes of Shotgun onto YouTube. So you can check them out on there because they're not on the network, but you can watch the full episodes of the early Shotguns on YouTube. The Mirage Nightclub in New York City pays host to a WWF show like no other. Paul Heyman helped them choose the venue.
Yeah, because imagine going into a nightclub at three in the morning. Paul Heyman's there in his floor-length leather duster, sweating his ass off.
It would certainly turn me off. the aesthetics of it. Now, honestly, to me, it felt like if WWF had bought ECW in the 90s and did WWECW early.
Yes.
In terms of the aesthetic of it, it had a vibe of ECW.
Yeah.
In terms of the presentation of it, like the rabid nature of the show, the real like grittiness of it. It flies in the face of everything that WWF has been about to this point, which is making everything big and bombastic and making superstars. They've done something really down and dirty and gritty. Is this in response to WCW? Is this in response to ECW? Or is it in response to both?
I think both. And it's weird looking back at it as well, because if you haven't seen it out there in audio land, come to me. Mm-hmm. It's a black ring canvas with yellow ropes. It's NXT before NXT, basically.
Yeah.
But it just, like you said, I always go on about how I like it being a living organism. I like it when it's a bit rough around the edges. I loved how this looked. Absolutely loved it. And the atmosphere was brilliant. They clearly just went, let's get a load of New York smarks in who are just going to probably be half pissed. Let's give them just a good night of wrestling. But this was stark compared to the other WWF of 96, 97.
This should have been what NWO Nitro looked like.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
They'd have had me at hello if they'd gone to, welcome to NWO Monday Nitro, and it was this.
This is what Tony Khan's Ring of Honor should look like.
Yeah, very true. As opposed to just sort of like, it's got WWE, CW vibes now as Ring of Honor. It should look like this. It should be in sort of smaller, cheaper venues. And they should just pack it out. It'd be great.
Yeah.
They are presenting a more edgy product for that reason. Todd Pettingill has grown a goatee.
he's gone from being, hey, I'm slick back Todd Pettingill, to he's got a buzz cut and a goatee and he's wearing leather trousers. It's like, what happened here?
He's been told he needs to be cool now. So yeah. He's like, oh, I guess this is cool.
Bye, mullet.
Presenting an edgier program, of course, the first tag team that you showcase is the Flying Nuns, which is a team comprising of... Oh, I thought I wrote down their names. Mother Angelica and Father Smucker.
Sister Angelica and Mother Smucker.
Sorry about that. Sister Angelica, that makes more sense. Sister Angelica and Mother Smucker. This is the Headbangers.
It is.
It's Martian Thrasher. In a weird nun gimmick, they show them leaving the monastery. It's the big church in New York. They show them leaving the church, and they filmed it in one go. So it just shows them leaving the church, as if they've left from here to come to the wrestling. And you got the vibe that they just had one shot to do this, one take to do this, and it was done. Because not only do you have loads of passers-by just looking at this bizarre image, but as they're walking out, there's an old woman with a shopping bag stood really close to them, just staring as they walk past. And she's my favourite. I'm sad she didn't manage them.
Yeah, she should have. She would have. Oh, she would have given them a piece of her mind, I'm sure.
But they beat the Godwins with help from Brother Love, who declared not the Flying Nuns, not the Flying Nuns, but the Sisters of Love.
And it was... The crowd were hot for these because, like you said, it was a really good crowd. I believe we got the first holy shit chant in WWF history.
I believe it was the first holy shit chant in.
Because Vince even goes, ha ha, holy something at least, ha ha. I'm sure there was BWO chants. They were just rabid and it did feel kind of like comedy review because you've clearly got fake nuns with beards and fake boobs fighting what is ostensibly hillbilly gimmicks and odd, you know, nothing to write home about in the actual match, but it's different. Fuck me.
It really is. I forgot to mention, of course, that it's Vince McMahon and Sonny
on
commentary for this one. I like the addition of Sonny to this.
Yeah.
It gives it, you know, obviously Sonny being there does give it that sex appeal. They managed to make her do the least sexy thing possible a bit later on, which we will talk about, because it's kind of... Bear in mind, this is a cool, edgy show, but it's Vince signing off on it. So there is only so far one can take such a thing. Goldust beats the Sultan in singles competition. He does so as the Sultan puts him in the camel clutch. Marlena gets on the apron, and with her back to the hard cam... Whaps her jugs out to distract the Sultan. It's what happens. It's not me being creep. She whacks her jugs out. She gets her boobs out.
For the and lads. Bob Backlund
and the lasses.
Shits himself.
Bob Backlund is horrified at this at ringside. Horrified at this.
Yeah, because he's a famous never nude as Bob Backlund.
Crush battles Ahmed Johnson, but we don't really get much of the match because the Nation of Domination are just all over the ringside area, and they just turn this into a battering of Ahmed Johnson, a real brutal brawl as well.
Yeah, Crush fucking twats him between the eyes with a chair.
That chair shot was fucking horrible.
Yeah. I mean, we're still in the new gen here, Tom, aren't we?
With yes.
Holy shit chants, female nudity and a chair shot to the face by a man wearing all black.
We're there, damn it.
Yeah.
We get a match between Mascarita Sagrada and Mini Vader.
Oh, yes.
We see Mini Vader and Jim Cornette arriving earlier today. Coming down the escalator, Mini Vader needs a piss. So Jim Cornette takes him to the urinals. Now, there's a great story behind this. I wonder whether you know the story behind this.
No, I'm not aware.
Right, so the plan was going to be that they shot this bit, and it's so organic and so rushed. That's why we had like the bin bag shopping lady earlier. Like, it's so lastminute.com all hoi together. So Jim Cornette and Mini Vader were going to come down the escalator, and Mini Vader would need a pee. The plan was going to be they go into the gents and the urinals would be so high that Cornette has to hold Mini Vader up in order for him to piss. However, they get into the urinals and the urinals are perfectly sized for Mini Vader. So it makes no sense to do that, which is why it had that really weird ending where it's just Cornette just like, oh, you go, here we are in the toilet, have a piss.
And there's like a little kid running into shot waving and everything. It's just... Oh.
The energy around it is hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. But never mind the energy of that, Tom. Is it time to see the least sexy thing of all time?
It is indeed, because it's during the opening of this match that they bring Sonny into the ring to serenade and dance. Well, she's dancing for Sagrada Jr. Because one of the biggest songs of the last year was Los Del Rios, the Macarena. Mm. So they get Sonny to do the Macarena while Todd Pettingill does a freestyle version of the Macarena for Sagrada. And it is... I'm not a cool man, Atkins, at all. And I never pretend to be. But even I was fucking cooler on my saddest day than what they presented in Mirage Nightclub on this night.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was Todd going, hey, Masquerita. But I watched this at 1.5 speed. So at first I was like, ooh, Todd Pettingill's got bars. And then I watched watched it at regular speed. I was like, oh, no, he's just being, you know, a bit ignorant towards Mexican people. Fantastic.
Yep. And Sonny just did the Macarena. And it's the least sexy dance you could have imagined from the woman who was there for the sex appeal. Well done. Well done, everybody. Sagrada wins the match.
Yeah.
And Mini Vader, Jim Cornette chews out Mini Vader afterwards, and they both end up giving him a pasting to end the show.
They rip off his kecks, and quick as a flash, Jim Cornette's running in his big undies, and he runs to the back, and that's that. You did miss one bit as well, which was quite cool, during the... We glossed over it with the Ahmed Johnson.
Oh, I thought, I must have been mistaken, because I thought we looped back to that, but clearly we don't, which is the Pearl River Plunge.
Yeah. Fucking oh yeah, so after the Nation beat down Ahmed Johnson, Goldust and the Godwins come back out, and we've got a 4-on-4 fight. Spills into the street. Ahmed Johnson, he's got D'Lo Brown, and fucking gives him a Pearl River Plunge on top of a car, and it's cool as balls.
That is possibly the coolest visual from Shotgun Saturday Night episode one. Ahmed Pearl River plunging D'Lo on top of a car.
It's like you said about, like, when you'd seen clips of, like, the famous clip of Triple H and Undertaker on the escalator and seeing, like, Terry Funk and that. If you just went, oh, there's a new late night WWF show, and all you heard about it was, Marlena got her boobs out and Ahmed Johnson powerbombed someone on a car in New York City, you'd be like, that sounds amazing.
It does sound amazing. They're really good at creating little highlight moments, but they're just not good at everything else at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts on the first Shotgun Saturday Night?
In terms of them trying something different and the vibe, it was kind of cool. In-ring was nothing really to write home about. Like, your first show and two of the matches were non-finishers. But like I said, they're trying something different, and it's interesting. I think I'll say that it's a curio looking back on it. But and I was reading something after this, and like a blog post somewhere, someone saying WWF ideas that didn't last as long as they should, and they were saying that the problem for Shotgun Saturday Night is at this stage they're just trying to see if they can produce more risque content, and as we'll see, that'll just become Raw. So Shotgun becomes irrelevant pretty soon.
Very quickly. But we'll enjoy it as a curiosity for as long as we have.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Right. Yes.
Tom skims through Superstars. Great. Two shows instead of just Raw. Yeah. We might as well go to 2 hours now, fuck's sake. Yeah. So Superstars took place the night before Raw. I like to watch Superstars because it gives you a bit more a well-rounded view of some of the stories that are playing out on Raw. Because at this point, Raw is kind of prime time, the main show for WWF. But it's only really recently been given that mantle. A lot of that storyline progression happened on Superstars, which is why I thought, well, they're on the network, I'll glance at them and I'll see if anything fun happened. And do you know what? This was a fun episode of Superstars.
Hey.
Doug Furness and Phil LaFon faced Cibernético and Pierroth from off of Mexico.
Fuck off, that sounds class.
In what feels like a rib on JR, Mil Máscaras is on commentary, sounding bored and confused. Because JR did an interview with him last week and Vince very verbally slammed it for being crap.
Yeah.
So I think this is punishment. Cibernético, the match ends. It's not a bad match. Not a bad match. Cibernético, however, brings the match to an abrupt halt. He pulls the ref in front of Doug Furness as he's diving. This leads to the ref disqualifying Cibernético and Pieroff and giving the win to Furness and Lafon. Furness and Lafon leave celebrating, and Pieroff and Cibernético get on the mic and scream in Mexican, apart from when they tell the crowd to sit down, dogs. But they're sizing up Mil Máscaras. They're giving a bunch of shit to Mil Máscaras, and Mil is promising he'll settle it at the Royal Rumble.
Well, they're building. You can't blame them. Work is going to work.
They are going to build. Flash Funk beats Salvatore Sincere. Flash Funk's brilliant. For fuck's sake, what's wrong with everybody?
Yeah.
The Sultan didn't get a pair of tits in his face. He got just Matt Hardy instead. He batters Matt Hardy here. Hunter Hearst Helmsley beats Freddie Joe Floyd in a non-title match. And The Undertaker in the main event. The Undertaker in the main event of Superstars goes one-on-one with The Goon!
The Goon!
What a fucking curiosity this is! Right. So, match starts. Undertaker turns his back on The Goon. The Goon starts walking towards Undertaker, drops his hockey stick, and beats him up. To the point that I went, why'd you drop your hockey stick?
Yeah.
You're fucking battering with a hockey stick.
Yeah.
However, him beating up The Undertaker is to no avail. Goon, however, does get some offense in on Taker.
Wow.
I know. Like, some strikes for a little bit. At one point, The Undertaker sends the Goon into the corner, and the ref ends up getting knocked out by this. And when the ref is down, the Goon then uses the hockey stick on The Undertaker. But Taker no-sells it. We get a choke slam. We get a tombstone. The Goon loses to The Undertaker. Jim Cornette is on commentary for this, and he is running his mouth at The Undertaker on the house mic, taunting him by holding up body bags, promising that he's going to be putting one at the Rumble. Lights go out, bong, and Jim Cornette is still screaming, going, yeah, you're running away, Undertaker. Who do you think you are? Hey, Vader's going to kick your ass. You're running away from me. Lights come back up. Undertaker's behind Jim Cornette. He goozles Cornette, takes him to the ring, and hits him with a tombstone. What a lovely end to shot to Superstars that was.
Was it a worthwhile watch this week, Tom?
This week it was, just for the weirdness of seeing Undertaker versus The Goon.
The Goon!
And Cibernético and Pieroff versus Furness and Lafon.
The Goon!
And The Goon was there. God loving. To Monday Night Raw we go, January the 6th, 1997. Finally, we can begin our journey into 1997, known for such popular phrases as, no worry, Brett, I'll screw you over. And, oh, what's that? A 10-year contract? Sounds cracking, Your Honor. And nothing could go wrong.
And don't forget the famous one. What did that little blonde bollock say about me on TV? Pull his hair out.
That famous phrase from Shawn Michaels. Hey, Brett, you're shagging Sonny.
Keep it in your pants, Brett Thew.
Yeah, you're my hero.
Yeah.
We get Vader and Brett hype for tonight. A very up close and HD Vader promises Brett will find out what time it is later on. Plus, we get some highlights from the first ever shotgun, which shows Marlena getting her lads out and Ahmed Johnson Pearl River plunging D'Lo Brown onto a car. Oh,
it's all you get to show, isn't it? It's all you need to show.
Those are the only two important things from shotgun. Yeah. That and Todd Pettingill's goatee. How about this for an opening match? And one I don't remember seeing that often, unless I'm very much mistaken. Owen Hart versus Mankind.
Yeah, it's an odd pairing. I never would have considered it, especially at this point when they're both heels.
And they do it anyway. Mankind's kind of this weird sort of tweener type sometimes.
Yeah.
Like he's a heel with sympathy.
Yeah.
You kind of feel for him because he's a bit messed up in the head. Owen wastes no time. He belly to bellies Mankind. Fucking right out of his shoes.
Yeah.
Goes for a sharpshooter, but Mankind escapes and rolls to the floor. Mankind is ripping and pulling at Owen's face, but Owen knows how to fight back Mankind style. He starts biting his fingers to block the mandible claw.
Yeah, there was a good line from Vince, which is, it's all you need in commentary, no matter what the promotion is. Vince just says, expect the ref to be lenient with the rules. That's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
Sorted.
And it does explain why, boy howdy, is this ref lenient, to the point that he's leaning horizontally, i.e. he's asleep. The match goes off the rails. Mankind goes to hit Owen with a chair, but ends up changing his mind. But Owen cracks Mankind in the guts with the tag team title.
Oh, yeah.
And they get back into the ring like nothing happened. Mankind is on the defense until he counters an abdominal stretch. Owen cracks Mankind with an enziguri, and it sends Mankind to the outside. And there we see more weaponry. We see, it looked like a case of drinks.
Yeah, like a weird little tray.
Yeah, a weird little tray that he bops over the head of Owen Hart at one point.
And there's a one-man ECW chance, and he tries his best, but no one picks up on it.
They bless him for having a go all the same. Mankind ends up winning this. He dodges Owen's corner charge and finishes him off with a pulling pile driver.
Yeah.
To end a short but simple, but really fun match.
Yeah, it was a good match, good chemistry. It's both met the other kind of halfway. You forget that Mick is a good wrestler as well as a brawler. And Owen Hart here was brawling, you know, as well as he could wrestle. Like you said, fucking hitting him with belly to belly straight out the gate. I was surprised. Obviously, it's Rumble season, so everything goes out the window. But I'm surprised that Mick got a fairly clean win over a champ. But here we are.
Yeah, I guess Mankind's another one that they've probably got some big ideas for.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not surprised after a hell of a feud with Undertaker that he had last year. He's clearly impressed the right people.
Oh yeah, definitely. And as 97 goes on, oh boy.
Oh howdy. Shawn Michaels and Jose Lothario are backstage with Peach Lothario, Jose's son. Bless him, his hat's too big for his head.
We'll have to tell our good friend Aiden Gibbons about this, because Aiden Gibbons has this weird rule that Pete is a horse's name. So if we tell him that there's a fella in a Stetson called Pete, he'd be like, no, Pete is a horse's name.
He won't believe us if we tell him.
He won't.
They won't believe him. Jose is feeling much better after he suffered from a bout of camera-in-the-face-itis.
Mm.
He's determined to be in Sean's corner for the Royal Rumble. And Pete Lothario, his son, is there as well, as I say, in the aforementioned big cowboy hat. Pete says a weird line. I've been assisting my dad in every way possible. Why was the first thing I thought was, oh, is he wiping his arse for? It's the way he put the emphasis of, I've been assisting my dad in every way possible.
To be fair though, Tom, that's your first thought in everything. I could be like, oh, just got a spare sausage roll here. Do you want one? You'd be like, oh, do I have to wipe your ass for it? And I'm like, no, you can just have it.
I mean, you've made a really valid point that,
yeah,
I can't come back from. Pete throws down to Sid for the Rumble. Says, do you think you're leaving with the title? Nay, not with the Lotharios around. Sean tells Sid he has upset the entire Lothario clan.
Ooh.
He used a camera at Survivor Series. Not even the kitchen sink will work at the Royal Rumble. Sean reiterates that he promises, Your Honor, he will not interfere in the Bret Hart Vader match later tonight.
Yeah, in my notes I put, Pete is a bland but nice boy.
He seems like a lovely boy.
Yeah.
He seems like a good son. He would wipe his dad's ass.
Wipe his dad's ass while wearing a lovely hat and threatening to fight a 6'8" lunatic.
Wipe my dad's ass and I'll kick your head in, Sid. Nay. We get a recap of Shotgun Saturday Night. We've talked about it. Ahmed beating up the Nation, Pearl River plunging D'Lo, Marlena getting a Chebs out, the Flying Nuns debut, and the brother love assist for Mother Smucker and Sister Angelica.
I am glad that I watched the Shotgun at 1.5 speed, because even at that speed, brother love's promo still fucking dragged on. Jesus Christ.
But he loves you.
Mm.
there's something like I know Bruce Pritchard works for WWE, but yeah. I think there's a quiet general belief that should things change and should he move on from WWE in whatever capacity, then the excitement is those Something to Wrestle With episodes are going to be really good again.
See, I never listened to Something to Wrestle With. I heard big things about it, and when I checked it out for the first time, it was while he was back at WWE. So every answer was just, I don't remember, I don't recall, I'm not at liberty to say. I was like, I can't be bothered with this. But I've heard that when he doesn't give a fuck, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think some of the earlier episodes are really, really good. Really, really good. Diesel and Razor Ramon are taking on Doug Furness and Phil LaFon. Honky Tonk Man is on commentary for this one.
Oh, hello. Hello, he's... Wayne.
A big Wayne Ferris, who has been revealed as DLC for 2K24.
Oh.
You lucky thing. He is in, and I'm not making this up, the Post Malone and Friends pack.
Of course, yeah.
Along with the Headbangers.
Hey!
It's basically the Shotgun Saturday Night pack.
Were you saying before, imagine going into a nightclub and seeing Paul Heyman. Imagine going into a nightclub and seeing Post Malone, the Headbangers, and fucking Honky Tonk Man. Oh, you turn and leave.
I turn and go straight in for more.
You do a little 360 and be like, cool move.
Jerry Lawler gives us something topical. Harry Helmsley died over the weekend. He was the American real estate billionaire whose company owned the Empire State Building, among a series of New York hotels.
It's a mad claim, that, isn't it? I'm just like, I have some nice plants and a cat. And he's just like, yeah, I've got the Empire State Building. It's like, well, fuck me, I guess then, yeah.
Just going to put the rent up for a laugh.
Dickhead.
Diesel and Razor isolate Doug Furness until he dropkicks Diesel into the turnbuckle. I should mention that the reason that Jerry Lawler mentioned Harry Helmsley, just so he'd get the line in and go, well, Hunter's expecting a windfall. There was reason. But he wasn't just being weird. Yeah. He is normally weird. Phil LaFon, a house of fire, almost turns the tide for Doug Furness, who gets a shoe in. The match completely breaks down. It ends up with Furness and LaFon double clotheslining Diesel over the top and then winning with a combo move. It's a diving clothesline.
Yeah.
And then I want to say either a sunset flip or an O'Connor roll off the back of that. Jack Atkins with your almanac of graps, your grapmanac. What would you have said that was? It felt like a sunset flip. But it also didn't feel like a sunset flip.
Is it a jackknife pin?
It could be a jackknife pin.
Yeah, because it's the actual offensive move. It's part heart attack, part doomsday device. But then, like you said, just into a kind of pinning predicament.
Because what happens is you've got LaFon holding the legs and Furness coming off the top with a clothesline. And then so... fake Diesel goes down, but he falls down over Furness's knees, who's holding his legs, and then he rolls forward into a pin. And now you've said it, I think it's a jackknife pin. It's a weird offensive move. I think it looks cool.
Hello, Dave. Oh. Your days are numbered, cunt.
Get Kobashi on him immediately. His time's up. Plans have changed.
What did you think of this match?
I enjoyed it. I think Furness and LaFon are very capable wrestlers.
Mm.
Do they excite me as wrestlers? No.
No.
Sorry.
Like it feels like they should have gone to WCW because it's more gimmicky in the WWF at this moment in time. Whereas WCW, you can just kind of get on and being a good wrestler and then figure out the rest later. They need something. They need a manager. They need an actual gimmick or something. Because like you said, very good in the ring. First half of this match, it was a bit boring, but when it got to like the vinegar strokes at the end, as we like to say, it really picked up. But all I'm saying is Glenn Jacobs, fuck me, the size of him.
He's a big boy, isn't he?
He looked amazing. And Jerry Lawler and Vince McMahon were just like, oh, look at that big muscly boy. Isn't he great? Yeah, Razor's there too. But look at Diesel. Oh, fucking hell.
Oh, look at the tonnage. Look at the mass. But Honky Tonk Man has said, whilst they are very good, he's not picking fake Diesel and fake Razor to be his clients as he's looking for the next greatest intercontinental champion of all time. So he's shot down Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Mark Mero, Steve Austin,
Fake Diesel, Fake Razor, Bret Hart at this point as well. So I presume who he's going to get is going to be brilliant.
It'll be the best wrestler of all time, Tom.
Clearly the best wrestler of all time. If he shot down all those brilliant people.
Yeah.
We get a recap of the end of last week's Raw, which had Marlena getting knocked down courtesy of Helmsley, Goldust, and some chaos at the top of the ramp on Raw. And then we get another shot of Marlena getting her top bollocks out on Shotgun Saturday night. This is clearly the best part of the show, not even lying.
Yeah.
Next week, it's Mark Merrow and Goldust versus Lawler and Hunter. Tag team shenanigans. Bret Hart is backstage. He starts running down Shawn Michaels, as was the style at the time, telling him to stay out of his way later on. And just as Bret starts talking about Vader, Sid's music hits and Bret looks livid that he's been cut off here. Now, for a long time, I've been thinking Bret just is crap at timing and stuff. So he's just a victim of being on a live program. But the more I'm seeing it, more I think this actually might be a masterfully woven story, which is just designed to make Bret Hart look like a man out of time by having people cut him off constantly and just constantly being pushed over for the sake of somebody else and his mic not working at all this stuff. I really want to believe this is a really cleverly woven story, but unfortunately with the players involved, I think it's more of a happy accident, but it's working all the same.
If it works, it works, Tom. If it works, it works.
It is working, I think. He's cut off because Sid's doing an interview.
Oh, God.
So, Jim Ross is conducting it and his music is playing over the top of it. This is a great trope. I'm so glad we keep doing it.
No, don't forget the rest of the trope as well. Sid's not wrestling tonight, but he's in full gear and he's wet.
Of course, soaked wet, title on, just his pants and his boots. Sid is asked by JR if he's intimidated by Shawn Michaels and the Lothario family, and Sid says he is intimidated by nothing. He says the ring is the dying field. And
I thought I'd misheard that because I've written he's like, he calls the ring a dying field.
No, I think dying field.
He meant killing field, but no, it's a dying field. Someone salted the earth. No crops will grow. His family will go hungry.
Basically, it's a fallow year for Sid. I watch this. I watch Raw with the subtitles on, just in case I miss any little nuggets on commentary as I go. And he says this is a dying field. Inside here, you have to kick or take a kick in, and all that. But the subtitles say in Syria. So I kind of was half watching at this point and I saw Sid, what I believe, talking about Syria. I was like, he's not talking about Syria. It turns out it's a mistake on the subtitles. In case you watch it with subtitles on, he's not talking about Syria. And he is definitely saying dying field, though.
Yeah. Right.
The day I was born the man. Wow. Poor Mrs. Psycho.
Congratulations, it's a man. She's like, all right, we'll call it Sydney.
I hear he came out soaking wet in his trunks with the title belt on.
Laughing.
Just laughing maniacally. He's going into San Antonio with the odds against him, knowing he'll walk out the man regardless. I am the master and the ruler of the world, etc. What did you reckon of Sid here?
It's the usual... It was shite, but because it's Sid, it's so entertaining and I loved it. Like, he's saying, I will walk in the man, and then he stops and does his, like, laughing face and then continues, and I will walk out the man. I still really like his catchphrase. He's still really over. They're doing something different with his presentation in interviews. What he's saying is crap, but it's entertaining crap.
It is entertaining crap. God bless him. Shawn Michaels has interrupted. He's got Jose Lothario with him. Shawn's doing comms on the next match. He basically ignores Sid and he does a striptease on the announce table while Sid laughs like a mentalist in the ring.
He starts waving at him like an excited toddler, like, hello.
Hello, Shawn.
Shawn Michaels, who's dressed like a cartoon drug dealer. He's got on a black trench coat, jeans, sunglasses and long hair. And he's trying to take his dick out. It's like, what the
It's a look.
It's mental.
The story has been that Sid hasn't apologised for giving Jose Lothario a case of camera to the head-itis.
Yes.
And Sid says, all right, I apologize. Not for what I did, but for what I'm going to do to you at the Royal Rumble. Classic heel line. I don't mind it.
I didn't mind it either.
It was good here. And Sid wanders off. We come back for our main event of the evening. It is Bret Hart versus Vader.
Ooh.
We get a recap of Cornette getting tombstoned by The Undertaker on Superstars before we get into it. And this match is a scrap from the off. They both fight outside and Vader gives Bret a pummeling.
Yeah, before it even kicks off, Vince says it's all about attitude and you'll find it here in the WWF. And here's a man with bad attitude, Vader. And then, like you said, they're just teeing off.
See, I heard him say, it's all about the new generation.
It's all about the new generation. Here's some woman's tits.
Yep. Hey, look at that woman showing her new generation. That's what I heard, Your Honor. Austin is watching as we go to break, and Vince nearly creams his kecks at this. Oh, who's Austin? Like, mate, you book the show. You know he's here.
Where am I?
Vince, you hired him. I mean, this is the same guy who walked into a creative meeting and said, who the fuck hired Raven? So actually, I can't imagine that he forgot that Austin was there.
Yeah, and the man who ate burritos every day and didn't have a fucking clue what a burrito was because he thought they were just called meat wraps.
God, he's a monster, allegedly. Bret gets the knees up on a moonsault from Vader that just gets him back into the fight. But before that, Vader just fucking clattered Bret into the break. He does a Bret's rope splash onto Bret for a two. Imagine doing a splash off Bret's own rope onto Bret. Would that be more powerful or less powerful?
Oh, I don't know. It's like when The Rock would hit Austin with a stunner. It would be powerful enough, but not quite as good as, you know, the on-brand version. Before we talk about that moonsault, though, I have a bone to pick with L. fucking Hebner.
No, your favourite referee.
Oh, my favourite referee. Who, let's say, as a referee, he's doing his job well. In kayfabe, though, he's the shittest ref ever. Because Vader's going for the Vader bomb. And L's fine with that. Vader goes to the top rope. L gets on the apron and gets in his face. He's like, get down right now. And gives the advantage to Bret Hart. And I'm just like, fuck off, L. Fuck off.
He's talking to Vader like I talk to Pablo, my cat, when he jumps on the oven.
Oh, get down. Oh, you get down,
you little prick.
You little tinker.
Stop trying to cook yourself.
You'll have no yogurt for a week, you little shit.
But Dad, I like yogurt.
Well, there's none of it. This gravy train's empty.
Oh, I like gravy too, though, so that's fine. Earl's... we've talked about this a few times, but I think it's a really good point that you bring up that I think bears repeating from the Jack Atkins School of Wrestling Thoughts and Editorial. Earl Hebner is a shit referee in kayfabe.
Yeah.
Always getting injured, always missing key moments.
Always interfering, putting his hands on talent, showing bias. Yeah. Yeah.
He's worse than Nick Patrick.
He is, but at least Nick Patrick was, you know, clearly on the take.
There is that. Very true. Yeah. Bret crossbodies Vader and they both fall to the outside of the ring.
Yeah.
They continue fighting outside and then Sid turns up and it looks like he's going to do a run-in and then he looks straight into my soul, i.e. straight down the lens of the camera and goes, come on. And like takes the cameraman for a walk.
It was like the Batista Ric Flair angle. Better than the Batista Ric Flair angle. As he's doing that and he's, you know, sexing you with his eyes, in the background you just see Steve Austin fucking pelted to the ring.
And the Steve Austin bit is fabulous because there's so much going on here. Sid's kidnapped a cameraman. The ref is arguing with Vader. And then if you just blink and you'll miss it, look in the distance. You know, you've got to drink it all in. You know, a bit like a Manet painting. You've got to drink it all in. Because in the distance you can see Steve Austin hitting a stunner on Bret Hart.
Fucking, it was brilliant. I loved it.
It was very rare do you see the stunner outside the ring, unless you're playing one of the 2K games.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
It was nice to see. This led to Vader giving him a bloody old Vader bomb back in the ring and picking up a win over Bret Hart.
Yeah.
massive win for the guy who wasn't good enough to headline his own pay-per-view 2 weeks ago.
And we need to mention as well, Sean was on commentary for this and he was fucking tearing Bret Hart a new one. Yeah. He was saying that Bret Hart doesn't know how to dress, which is true. Bret Hart's a terrible dresser, but so Shawn Michaels. Have you seen the state of the man? but he did put over Vader at one point really well, because Vince McMahon was saying, oh, Bret Hart needs this win. And Sean's like, well, yeah, he doesn't need a loss, does he? He's like, yeah, but the momentum, Bret Hart needs the momentum going into the Royal Rumble. And Sean's like, yep, so does Vader. Vader's massive. He could win it too. And I was like, fair fucks to you, Sean.
No, actually, no, I love Sean. But I will argue that he's not putting over Vader. He's just shitting on Bret.
True. It's a backhanded compliment.
It's one of them where, like, Sean famously didn't want to work with Vader.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, why is Vader all of a sudden Sean's favourite person? Is it because he's beating the shit out of Bret?
Oh,
more
yeah.
than likely.
Yeah, his motives for doing it were completely selfish and prick-like, but I like the fact he was at least slightly professional in trying to get someone else over.
He was attempting to, in a backhanded way, put Vader over.
Yeah.
That. We can applaud
yeah,
him so yeah. long. Let's go backstage. Sid has that cameraman and he's taking him into a locker room and he's there holding by the throat, poor old Pete, I'll do anything for my dad, including wipe his ass, Lothario. And Sid then puts Pete in position, power bombs him onto the table. The fucking table doesn't break.
Ooh, yeah, it was like a proper decorator's table as well. It was covered in paint, old butties. It looked rough.
Jeez, a 9-year-old Matthew Gregg goes, oh, be a good idea for a future pit pole. Yeah.
Ah, let me tell you something, pal. I've had a vision of something called YouTube.
My God, if Matt had invented YouTube, he wouldn't hang out with the likes of us.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Actually, he probably still would.
I think the money would have got the better of him by now.
Talking of the money getting better of him, not only did Sid hit a powerbomb on Pete, he had the WWF title on the entire time.
Of course he did! I like that he wears it. I'm trying to think. I was thinking when I saw that of wrestlers that just always wore the belts. And there's one that springs to mind, and it's a really deep cut. It's rock superstar Chaos from XPW. I think he was XPW TV champion, and he wore the belt through his entire match.
Oh, into that.
I know, right? It's great. Yeah. And I want Sid just to wear the belt all the time.
But he's got no trousers to hold up, Tom, so it doesn't mean anything.
There is that. Poor Pete, he has been powerbombed onto a painter's table. It hasn't broken, but his fragile body may have done. After the break, Shawn Michaels is backstage with Savio Vega and Aldo Montoya, head of medical. And they are
Aldo Montoya in street clothes and a mask.
One must always protect his identity. He doesn't want anyone knowing that he's just incredible.
He's not Portuguese.
No one knows that I'm not a medical expert. But they do that classic thing that they do where they just stand around him and just go, where's the doctor? Where's the doctor? One of you three dickheads, go and get a doctor.
One of Seriously. Four, because I had to rewatch this to realise Bart Gunn's there as well. Poor Bart Gunn. He's so insignificant, I thought he was a medic at first.
I've written down that a medic turns up.
It's Bart Gunn.
Fucking Bart Gunn, isn't it? Oh, I'm sorry, Bart. What a massive disrespect of Bartholomew Gunn.
A genuinely hard man.
He is the hardest of men. I feel bad now getting that wrong. Bless him. So that was Raw. First Raw of 1997. We've made it.
Yeah. What did you think of the main event?
I enjoyed it. It does feel like the style is changing.
Yeah. It was.
Even Bret Hart is getting in there now.
It's fucking chaos as well.
Yeah. I like it.
It's a weird one because the show as a whole, I thought it was a good Raw. It was focused, even though Owen and Mankind was out of nowhere. But the main event scene is absolutely electric because you got Vader, who's building up for a match with Undertaker, getting a win over Bret Hart, who's building up for a Royal Rumble with a fight with Steve Austin and maybe Shawn Michaels. But Shawn Michaels has got to fight Sid. But Sid's beaten Bret, and Bret has beaten as just... Ugh.
Wheels in wheels, sir. Wheels in wheels.
It's a trifle of... It's a man trifle. That's what it is.
A mifle.
Starring John Travolta, number one, the US box office in January 1997.
a man trifle. What a way to start 1997. It's going to be a fun year, baby.
Oh, fuck yeah.
We're going to have some fun to be had. Anything you want to plug?
The great work done by all of us here at Cultaholic.
Very diplomatic answer.
What about yourself, Tom? Been working on anything nice?
Well, thank you for staying up late with us, with myself and Fraser Porter and Jack Atkins via Cultaholic.com for AEW Revolution. What a long show it was. Probably was. We're recording this beforehand, so I'm guessing. I assume everything's fine. Mm. Otherwise, for the latest wrestling news throughout the day, you can check out Cultaholic.com. He is at Brat Atkins on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Another week without Bulldog.
I know, it's fucking... It's just a shit existence. That's why this podcast this week's only 25 minutes long.
No Bulldog, no peace. Emma Sagrada. Love you, bye.
Imagine Bulldog on Shotgun Saturday night coming to the ring with a pint.
Is it a wrestling show?
Oh, well, yeah, there's pints for you then, yeah.
Now, what's happened is, now, in true Bulldog style, what's happened is, Bulldog's gone, oh, Vince, I can't make it to Shotgun. Oh, I'm poorly. Uh-huh. Got out of that. Right, we're off to Mirage Nightclub tonight in New York for a do. And then he gets there and goes, oh, shit, Rose here.
And Vince's like, oh, nice of you to be here, Davey. He's like, yes, I am here for work. Can I have a butty, please? I'm hungry. Do you mean his auto butters? Said this is a working man's club. I've come here for stripper and a raffle. Dig ahead. And we wish you a very good night here from all your friends at the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. It's 1 a.m. Sleep tight tonight.
Hey!
Absolutely zero lag this week.
Brilliant, wasn't it?
Zero.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.